Good afternoon. I'm C. Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. And welcome aboard, folks. We're going to play a little bit of everything today. We're going to play a little bit of music, and we're going to have my guest, Scott Lissel, back, and we're going to talk about OFA commentaries. How are you, Scott?
Good. Yourself, Jeff?
Pretty good. These things are not working as I thought. We should actually hear something in the headphones. So we'll do that. We'll work on that in a second here. And in the meantime, we'll play some more songs. And we'll start off today's show. It's episode number 59, I think, today on this August the 6th of 2013. And we'll be right back with the Agriculture Show. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Subi Proud. This is my song, Can't Unpave the Parking Lot, on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Give your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. To the larger service, make your hands willing, your health for better living.
4-H,
for community and country.
4-H,
respond to food security.
4-H,
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
4-H.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, that's much better. It's always a challenge getting this circuit board to this board to work here, Scott. I have to admit that I'm not always the best at it. So we are at episode number 59. It is August the 6th, and it's 2013. And this is your host, Jeff Sager, with my co-host today, Scott Lissel, returning co-host. Thanks so much for coming out.
Oh, you're welcome, Jeff. Glad to be here.
It was quite a good show we had last time, but it was a long show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It gets hard thinking of all these topics off the bat.
Yes, it did run a little long.
I know. So we'll attempt to keep this down to a good 3 or 4, maybe at the most, so we can pretend we're fresh.
What do you have for us first today, Jeff?
Well, I was looking through, we did a lot of the OFA commentaries last time, and I was looking through that collection, and it's also on the the Ontario Federation of Agriculture website under media, where they list all their commentaries, so if you're welcome to go there and have a listen to those. Now, what's on there is one of the latest ones that came out after we did our show 2 weeks ago is one about this discussion about bees and that whole problem that's brought up in Ontario. So let's just listen to that, and we'll be can talk a little bit about the ins and outs. Maybe we can a little bit about this issues around a bee die-off, I think it's called. What do they call it? Sudden colony disorder and stuff, and I think that's the word. So anyway, we're just loading up here, so we'll let this thing do that, and I think we're there. Let me just make sure it's going to work. So it's been a... I'm going to try to get in another visitor sometime. Maybe
there's been a lot of buzz among agricultural and environmental...
Let's start this thing over, and we'll be right back.
There's been a lot of buzz among agricultural and environmental advocates on the state of bees in Canada. That's because a mysterious condition called colony collapse disorder has led to the demise of bees in record numbers in recent years. The jury's still out on exactly what is compromising these colonies, but one thing is certain. Industry, government, and researchers need to work together to find a science-based solution to solve the problem. Canadian farmers are intimately invested in the health of our land, water, and ecosystems in a way that is unique to our way of life and livelihood. That's why the subject of sudden bee death is so troubling. Many theories have been suggested as the cause of bee decline. Chief among them is the theory that a class of insecticides called neonicotinoids is to blame. But the issue is complicated. Third-party research on how these pesticides affect bee health has been inconclusive to date, and damage done to bee colonies in close proximity to crops treated with the pesticides is variable. Some eastern Canadian beekeepers have had their hives hardest hit by CCD, while in western Canada, beekeepers have seen less of an impact, even though the pesticides are commonly used across Canada on crops such as corn, soybeans, canola, wheat, and vegetables. The Ontario Federation of Agriculture is working with key industry and government stakeholders on the newly formed Bee Health Working Group. The group's mandate is to provide recommendations on how to mitigate the potential risk to honeybees from exposure to neonicotinoid pesticides. While OFA welcomes the opportunity to review solutions to the pressing issue, we also caution against making hasty decisions that could have negatively impact agricultural production and distract from identifying the real source of bee decline. Pesticides, when used appropriately, are an important tool for modern agriculture. all farmers in Ontario who buy and use pesticides must be professionally trained and certified in safe pesticide use and are required to carefully follow label directions that provide instructions for each product's safe and proper application. In 2012, Canada's Pest Management Review Agency, PMRA, responded to concerns about how pesticides impact bee health, and research continues through the 2013 growing season. Ontario farmers will await a science-based verdict, and we look to PMRA to use that evidence to mandate what tools farmers can safely access for use on their crops. Ontario farmers have a solid reputation for being quick to adopt new technologies and production techniques. If science concludes that we must find alternative ways to produce safe, quality food in Canada, then we will adapt. But we must avoid impulsive policies that limit a farmer's access to tools that are key to competitiveness, particularly if we lack the research to back it up. OFA continues to look for our federal and provincial government's leadership to make informed decisions that impact our ability to operate prosperous and sustainable farms. I'm Mark Wales, President of the Ontario Federation of Agriculture.
Okay. Well, that is a hot topic and has been for the last year. And it became noticeable last year especially. And here we are again with the topic coming up. Honeybees. Who wants to kill a honeybee? Nobody. It's a pretty miserable situation.
Yeah, I guess they're looking into it. Until you find the cause of the problem, it's really hard to solve.
Mm-hmm. Now, they, as Mark Wells said, the damages, they know the neonicotinoids, we'll call them neonics because it's easier to say.
Okay.
can damage bees, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. But as Mark said, it's not consistent. But just to, this is not to degrade the fact that neonics are very potent, but I'll just do a little background as far as I understand how the situation. So neonics is the latest product, and before that were organophosphates and other things. Now, the neonics are better because they're less toxic to most, to people and everything else, and you have to use less of them and less toxic to the environment. They're better. Neonics are better. But honeybees are hypersensitive to this one.
Okay.
So we're better off.
Is neonics a class of pesticide, or is it a specific product in it?
There are commercial formulations. The issue is you put seed treatment on your corn and soybeans, and the manufacturers have two or three formulations under their brand names.
Okay.
They are all neonicotinoids, but they have different trade names and slightly different, but their base chemistry is neonicotinoid.
Okay.
Now, the stuff in the old days used to kill, like, everything, and even the operators, you get sick from it. Guys who get spring corn plant disease, they whiff so much dust and that thing.
So it's more specific.
Yeah, but it unfortunately is really toxic to bees, and someone tried to explain to me this way, that it's 50 parts per billion. What does that mean? What 50 parts per billion is, that's counting from 1 to 50 once in 37 years.
Okay.
It just shows you how sensitive. Now, other species aren't that sensitive. I don't know. Let's just say house flies were 30,000 or something.
Okay.
But it's just that the honeybees are so super sensitive to this thing. Now, one last thing to the whole darn thing was, apparently, the neonics, although they are very toxic, maybe it has to do with, maybe they were the straw that broke the camel's back, because in general, our environment becomes filled with more and more things in it over the years, because that's our nature of our society.
Yeah.
And this was just the event that kind of, finally push things over the edge.
This is the one that affected the bees specifically.
Yeah, that's right. So, this is really a problem, because who wants to kill the bees? And there are guys trying to make a living at bees. And I don't know if you noticed, just down the road, when we go back home there, where the sunflowers are growing, That grower has brought in beehives to pollinate those sunflowers.
Yeah, I noticed that the other week there.
Yeah. So apparently it's getting harder and harder to find bees, and there's no doubt that the neonics are part of the problem, but to say they're all a problem and how much we should do about it, that's the rub.
How much of a role they play in the problem?
Yes, exactly. So time will tell, and we had some discussion about this at our local federation meeting, and one of our members pointed out that, this issue has two parts to it. There's a science of it, and then there's the public impression of it, and no one wants to kill bees.
No.
So generally speaking, as Mark Wales has said in this thing, you want to have a science-based solution, and the assumption that it takes away the emotional part of it.
Yeah, well, you want to determine what the cause is. You would hate to eliminate the wrong product and still be left with the problem.
That's right. So the deal is, if in fact you want to have a science-based decision, what would you do if the science showed they had to stop using neonicotinoids and what that would do to crop growing and going back to more dangerous products, less effective products? That's the hard part. What would you do?
Well, that probably would be more of a temporary setback to have to go back to something you already had until you actually found something that wasn't as harmful.
Mm-hmm. Or a better delivery method or something.
More specific delivery method. I think the biggest thing is to find the direct cause.
Mm-hmm.
And then make sure you're on the right path for the correction.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how the sound goes in and out. Yeah, I noticed on the way up here listening
having
to this,
some technical problems here.
Yeah, there's probably some dirty flies in the gear. But it's funny because both gauges are showing a good clean signal. Must be something after that, I guess. So that's the Ontario Federation's commentary about the bee kill-off, the hives dying and bees dying, and the issue with it is that it's a great product for what it was designed for, but this is peripheral, this is secondary damage is really a bad one.
Unintended consequence.
That's true. So let's just play a little song here, and we'll tune up another one of these commentaries. Is there something else you want to add to it, Scott?
Not a whole lot we can add to it, because at this point we don't have a lot of information to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Until they've determined what the cause is, or the cause is. Yes. It might not be just one.
That's true. So it could be a lot of other things going on there, too.
At this point, everybody's just speculating.
True. Okay, so let's play some songs here. I'm going to play the playlist from last week, which was an all-music show. It was a fun show, and we'll be back with our second commentary in a few minutes. It's your host, Jeff Sager, the Agriculture Show, and my co-host is Scott Lissel. See you shortly.
Mama, see. follow where it's your
Ontario farmer.
Well, you see my milk cow till hurry home. I had no milk since that cow been gone. Have you seen my milk cow till hurry home? Well, I'm going to the racetrack to see my pony run. He's the best in the world, but he's running. Son of a gun, I'm going to the racetrack to see my pony run. He's the best in the world, but he's running. Son of a gun.
Hi, this is Angie Koch. You are listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Okay, we're back. It's the Agriculture Show here on August the 6th of 2013. My co-host is Jeff Day. My co-host is Scott Lissell. We just listened there to a little bit about the commentary from the OFA about the bee die-off this summer, what's being done, lots of research, and I think there's a lot of plots out this summer. And so we'll maybe wrap up that a little bit later on, but let's move on to another topic. And I'm looking here on my screen, and this is from the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. This is their March 15th commentary of 2013. On the March 15th, they are talking about natural gas. So I'll click that on and listen to that, and we'll talk about that when we're done this little chunk. Stay tuned, folks.
Ontario farmers live and work in rural Ontario, where daily energy requirements can be significant. In addition to home heating requirements, farm businesses use significant amounts of energy to heat barns, run grain dryers, and ventilate buildings. But the type of energy used on Ontario farms varies and can have a huge impact on the environment as well as a farmer's bottom line. As the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, OFA, moves forward with its priority for government this legislative session, we will look for a commitment on reliable and affordable energy. Our priorities include doing the legwork on a key issue for farm families across the province, access to natural gas. Natural gas is North America's lowest cost, cleanest, most versatile energy source. While nearly every urban Ontario resident has access to natural gas, less than 20% of Ontario rural residents have the same opportunity. Those residents rely largely on oil and electric heat for their homes and businesses at twice the price of gas. Having no access to natural gas puts rural communities at a competitive disadvantage, too, because it's difficult to attract new businesses to towns where basic energy expenses will be double, simply because the infrastructure is not there to access natural gas lines. The OFA recently conducted a survey of farm members to help identify barriers to using natural gas. More than 400 survey participants contributed information that helps build the case for the expansion of natural gas lines and cost-effective access for rural residents. As we move forward with pre-budgetary consultations in the coming weeks, the OFA will ask Ontario's government to assist with the expansion of natural gas lines in rural Ontario by using infrastructure dollars already designated for rural communities. Funding to expand the natural gas pipeline network into rural Ontario will make low-cost energy available to a greater number of Ontario citizens, including farms, and give them a better competitive advantage. I'm Deborah Priddy-Stratoff, OFA Vice President.
Okay, so there we got a little story about natural gas, and I don't know if our listeners in the town would know it, but only 20% of rural people have access to gas.
It's a cost barrier to piping it all the way around to all the different rural areas for the amount of customers that you could get per mile of pipe.
Now, as Betty, Ms. Strayhoff had mentioned, For the small towns in rural Ontario, this is a real challenge to get businesses to move in because you got no natural gas. Who wants to move to your little, your little part of the world because it's too expensive for their employees and for their business. So, what was mentioned in this commentary was they'd like to get some funding from Infrastructure Ontario, and it's many different kinds of, there's infrastructure money out there in different programs, and the question, I guess, is how much should be spent on natural gasifying?
How much should be spent for somebody else's benefit? That's kind of comes down to it.
Yeah.
Seeing as provincial money is drawn from the cities, and it's kind of a private enterprise situation. Unlike Ontario Hydro, that's, shall we say, arm's length government.
Right. So, because that's a good point. Because although arguably, you know, people say, "Well, I don't have gas," but it's not like the government doesn't look after you. You do have energy available somehow.
Yes, you do have energy available. Like right. She mentioned oil and electricity. There's also propane, which is priced somewhere between the oil and the natural gas.
Yep.
So it is available. At what point does the government get involved with private enterprise and corporate?
Yeah, true. And, that infrastructure money, would the money be better off being, if you had to pick one or the other, would the money, any infrastructure money for rural Ontario, would it be better spent on putting gas lines in or maybe building better roads or bridges or something? So, because there's only so much money around. I mean, in a perfect world, you do everything all at once, but,
Unfortunately, we don't live in that world.
No.
And budgets are always constrained, and there's only a limited amount of money to go around. So would it be better spent on the actual physical infrastructure of the highways so farmers can ship their crops to market and have the ability to move their products around?
Or would it be better to put more pipe in the ground for the rural community? It's a tough call. I think, I don't know, in the little towns, they sure don't last long. They're full up. They don't grow. Now, whether you want more people to live there or not, it's a big question because little towns typically can't provide water and sewer either. So why would they, you don't want that growth there particularly. Like, its growth is to be in settlement areas now.
The small towns can grow. As they grow, then the feasibility of all this becomes more viable. The more people that share the cost, the easier it is to have this done.
It's true, and so maybe what would be good to see happen is, it may be on a case by case situation. We could look at how we can get all these here different.
I'm sure the natural gas producers would like to have everybody in Ontario on natural gas. They're not opposed to selling it. As it becomes more viable for them to stretch their lines out, more of Ontario will be covered.
So, now I know if we get a chance, we'll get around to it today. We can talk a little bit about what the OFA had in mind for infrastructure dollars. I know there was a commentary in here somewhere about that.
Yeah.
But,
The thing is with saying that a product is cheap, another way of looking at it is that it's cheap now. At one time, they were pushing electricity for home heating because at that time it was considered cheap and was going to stay cheap. As we now know, that is not the case with hydro rates going up. So saying that natural gas price is cheap, it's less costly now than other products.
But those relationships change over
those
time.
Those relationships can change.
Yeah.
We should probably avoid the word cheap as opposed to more cost effective.
Well, I think that's a good point. It depends. Yeah, you got to frame these things correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are attempting, folks, on behalf of you folks, to do our best we can to clarify. I hope we're doing that.
Because at one time there was a push on in Ontario for electricity.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was...
Put in your baseboard heaters and big honking panel and use electricity.
Yeah, and some people probably at the end were feeling a little roped in. Mm-hmm. So we'll say it. At the moment, natural gas seems more cost-effective.
Yeah.
And it is. And it may be for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
But like anything in life, there's no guarantees.
I'm not too sure. We'll do another one here shortly. I just found another commentary about cogeneration, which is also about natural gas. So we'll... Maybe some tie-in with that one at the when we hit that commentary next. Okay, I don't have anything else. Let's see, what did I put down here? I got Scott and I both take down notes while these are going. What jumps out at us? And I wrote down the access to the gas and how it impacts the growth of rural area with the lack of gas and perhaps funding.
Like a reliable domestic product.
Yeah. So, you're saying because we have lots of gas, it would be, we're funny, and in Canada, we're lucky, we got all these natural resources, but, if you had only natural gas, then it would seem pretty reasonable that everyone would have gas, you have that much security in
there,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like when you're in Central America, you eat lots of bananas because they're just always there. You'll use what you got first.
Yeah.
Right.
Like on-farm solar panels and stuff, too, produce the electricity in that, and that helps reduce their cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's another whole show about...
Well, that's another whole show because of the...
I'm surprised you brought it up, Scott.
Yeah, we could get way off on that, couldn't we?
Yeah. I know we've had the chance to talk about it over at the over coffee sometime, how it's, that the start is pretty ridiculous, but they're trying to build the infrastructure before they can be priced competitively, and it just drives people wild when the government does that. But I get it. But okay, let's try another one here. What have I been doing? I've been playing a song and doing that. So why don't we just do that? I'll tune up another one here, and we'll play it, and then we'll be back with a little commentary. Is that what I've been doing?
Yes, that's what you've been doing.
Okay, here we go. Here's the next topic. This is the cogeneration in Ontario and some ideas from the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. Here we go.
First power available in Ontario that deserves consideration by the agriculture sector. Combined heat and power, also known as cogeneration, effectively gets two uses out of one supply of fuel. Efficiencies gained through this type of combined system has the potential for fuel savings of 5 to 35% compared to when heating and power operations are separate. The concept of combined heat and power reuses waste heat generated from natural gas, nuclear, or biomass production as an additional power source. The greatest potential to adopt this system lies with mining, forestry, auto assembly, as well as some sectors of agriculture and food. The Ontario Federation of Agriculture is exploring the opportunities to use combined heat and power as an energy conservation model for our province. In agriculture, this system has potential benefits for greenhouses, food processing, and biomass production. One of the limiting factors for a widespread combined heat and power system in agriculture is the availability of natural gas in rural Ontario. But sectors already using natural gas, like greenhouses, provide opportunities to test the practicality of this energy recovery system. OFA is currently researching how combined heat and power can be created on farms where access to electrical grid and natural gas lines is readily available. We will be discussing these opportunities along with the overall impact combined heat and power can have on the Ontario economy with our provincial government for their consideration. OFA would like to see pilot projects using combined heat and power begin with greenhouses or processing clusters. These initial projects would utilize existing infrastructure to demonstrate the benefits of combined heat and power to our industry. Farmers who are able to take advantage of this new system can save on their energy bill, reduce their overall environmental footprint, and possibly even sell surplus power. Agriculture stands beyond the leading edge of using combined heat and power to address some of the province's increasing energy needs with the sustainable green option. Thank you. Don McCabe, Ontario Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, so that's ties into natural gas, and just to review what happened here was this is called cogeneration, and that can be in various sectors. We're talking about the agriculture sector, and that would be where operators of agricultural things, which are greenhouses or food processors or biomass energy producers, they're agriculture. These all are agriculture related. Would, as part of their process, cogenerate electricity. So when they make electricity, there's heat taken off, and the heat can be put to the greenhouse, for instance. So sounds like a good deal, because right now those greenhouse guys have to, buy fuel, they burn it, heat the greenhouse, and it goes away. But if they could put a generator in, they could make electricity while they're burning fuel, and then capture the waste heat. And I think I kept it at Bruce Nuclear for a while. They had that steam park up there where you could hook onto their steam pipes, and after the cooling.
Okay, the coolant pipes, yeah. for the nuclear reactors.
Yeah, so
and draw the heat off for like greenhouse heat.
Yeah, and I can remember at the time there was a guy who was started up a alfalfa dehydration plant up there.
Okay, so it needs a lot of heat.
It needs a lot of heat, and since this was waste heat at the Bruce Nuclear, they have a little industrial park there with a few steam lines running out there that you can hook onto and get steam from them for free, for lack of a better word. But it's for them it's waste. The other way, they have to dump it in the lake.
Yeah, yeah, they have to cool it.
So you know.
The biomass, now that would be like the methane collected from...
Yes. I think the new ones, you would certainly dump in like waste food and manure, and you get methane out
collect
of it.
Collect methane to generate hydro, and then from the hydro generation, take the heat from the cooling.
Yeah, and help the digester work in that case, I think. Or else export the heat if you have extra. But see, I didn't want to stop there with this example. So there's in Europe what they do, for instance, they actually harvest corn green off the field and put it in a silo, and it doesn't even go through cows first to make manure. They just put that right in a digester.
Oh, okay.
To make hydro.
Okay, so they let the corn basically rot and collect the methane.
Yeah.
And then use that methane as a fuel for the electrical generator.
Yeah. And then presumably they would have waste heat left over. Although, okay, I think a lot of that heat goes back in to keep the batch.
So then the farmer then could sell whatever hydro he doesn't need, mm-hmm, to the local grid.
Yes.
Okay.
So if hydro rates went up for biomass, then you could have farmers who would grow corn or soybeans, but not it would go no farther than where the local power plant was, or maybe on their farm, depending. I don't know where the economics of scale, like you have to have 500 acres or 5,000 acres to make a corn plant, a corn hydro plant, viable or not.
Okay.
But someone else will figure that out. But so,
is there any? How many working biomass from manure generators would there be in Ontario? Any idea?
Well, I think I'm just going to say I would say four or five that are pilots.
Okay.
Now, in our area here in Kitchener-Waterloo, or Region of Waterloo, one that comes to mind is the one that's out there at Grober, out in the Clyde area.
Okay.
Where they, it's a farm for veal. So they have some really powerful...
They have manure that they can turn into methane.
Yeah.
And generate hydro off it.
That's right.
Okay.
And to help that out, they don't make enough to make it... So they take... waste food scraps from the one I can think of is a local pet food distributor manufacturer just off the 401 at Guelph there, and they take those that stuff and they put it in their
digester, and it produces methane that then runs the engines that generate electric generators, and then they sell that product,
now,
the excess that they don't need off the farm,
right? So I believe at this point they're all financially functioning, but each of them is a special one, unique case, and the government has yet to put together,
kind of one-offs on a special permit.
that's what they are now. They don't have something as sophisticated yet as the windmills or the solar cells.
Okay.
Like all solar cells products projects have only paid this much per whatever.
Okay, so there's not a set price?
Exactly, not yet.
For the export, basically exported off the farm hydro then?
Yeah, from a biomass.
Okay.
But you do have that for solar cells and wind power.
So then we could be like, not to get too far off the track here, but Region of Waterloo at the landfill site
yes.
is drawing off the methane to run large generators.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be an example of a biomass facility then.
It would be. And if you tied it back into the agricultural scene, wouldn't it make sense that you could let a greenhouse operator hook up to the waste heat off the generators? Because those things are, like, I think they make it's a blend of greenhouse of,
because there's large engines that run the electrical turbines that then produce the electricity.
Yeah, I think they run the gas through a generator unit, like a regular engine generator.
Yeah.
And the fuel for the engine...
is the methane.
Is the methane. And depending on the quality of methane, it would include natural gas.
Okay.
Like they'd adjust the ratio to get a consistent horsepower.
Yeah.
And then...
consistent fuel supply for the engine, yes.
Yeah. That's how they make that work. Now, the thing is, there's heat.
Yeah.
And that's just being, it's just a radiator in the front of the thing that shoots the heat off up in the air. Now, why can't you capture that heat? And so, interesting idea, because there's a lot of money spent to operate a food plant and a greenhouse to heat them. And
yeah, like the greenhouse has a sizable need for heat in the wintertime.
Yeah, that big boiler.
And that's probably one of their significant costs to producing the vegetables in that.
Yep. So, okay.
If they could come up with a program for that, that would be great. Some of the people opposed to the large windmills would be happy with that.
Well, it's it's one of those things that was going to help rural Ontario is to allow a lot more of this here projects.
Well, a lot more diversification to the hydro generation.
Yeah. Well, just that, as a rural landowner or farmer or whatever, you can still sell beef and corn and whatever else, but you could theoretically sell hydro too.
Yeah, like, you have, without getting too far off the topic again, sizable buildings with sizable square footage of roof space mm-hmm. that solar panels could occupy and sell that hydro back off the farm mm-hmm. to the local grid. Every little bit helps, right?
And for all the right reasons, because, A, you're close to the consumer. You're close to, not like trying to ship hydro by big transmission line. You're using existing infrastructure. You just hook onto the, presumably you have three-phase power in your neighborhood. That's another whole bone of contention. But you can hook onto what's an already established grid and feed the grid from other spots. So.
Yeah, generate your own hydro and then sell the excess.
Yeah, it doesn't need any new infrastructure, and the demand is right out into your driveway. So. Okay, let's...
moving on here, Jeff.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's play a song and a little thing, then we'll be back with another segment. And thanks for listening in, folks, to the Agriculture Show. It's Thursday afternoon, August 6, 2013, and this is episode number 59. We'll be back in a moment.
Rocking chair money. Now I got rocking chair money, but I got it the hard, hard way. I fought in every battle from the start to the VJ Day. Now I'll rock, yeah, rock. Oh, baby, rock, rock on down the line. Now some folks seem to be jealous, some don't seem to care. But I got rockin' chip money, honey, to rock on away from here. Cause I love to rock, yeah, rock. Baby, rock, rock on down the line. I rocked way out on the ocean, I rocked from here and there. My baby stepped out while I was gone. Now she don't get my rocking chair, cause I love to rock, yeah, rock, baby. write my big check, baby, and then we'll have some fun. This rocking chair money, honey, it's better than toting a gun. Gonna love to rock, yeah, rock, baby, rock. Let's rock on down the line. Now, honey, let's go honky-tonk. Let's honky-tonk all night. Let's lollygag and smooch and love and do it all upright. Gonna love to rock, yeah, rock, baby, rock. Well, let's rock on down the line.
Hi, this is Nelson Rosales from World Accord. You're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Okay, so we're having a great time here today, folks. It's your host, Jeff Steger. My co-host is Scott Lissel. We've covered three topics so far about bee colony disorder, natural gas in rural areas, and then cogeneration. And just looking through our list of available audio commentaries from the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, just having a quick look here at one. It is about an agenda for farmers, and this was broadcast in April the 26th, I think it says here. So I'm just getting that tuned up, and we'll see what this sounds like. Presumably, it's... Well, that's not going to work so good. I wanted to have the audio in here. Okay, and then I got to go back and find something else because that one's not going to work too good. Sometimes these aren't connected. They don't have them connected with the audio files. I thought that one might, but it is not. Let's.
Oh, Jeff, just teasing here.
Okay, here's one about the budget, Ontario budget. Let's just see if this guy will. Pop up something that we can look at here. Yes, it will.
It's a critical time for Ontario's new provincial government. Following a throne speech that some critics suggested was vague, Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne will be expected to reveal details about her government's plan for Ontario. The Standing Committee on Finance conducts hearings in the lead-up to the new provincial budget, and the Ontario Federation of Agriculture plans to once again appear before the committee and the finance minister to provide input on the next provincial budget. With a mission to enable prosperous and sustainable farms, the OFA has some ideas for how Ontario should budget spending in areas of agriculture, food, and rural affairs. The Ontario agri-food industry contributes $33 billion annually to the Ontario economy, and represents 10% of the province's entire workforce with 700,000 jobs. And OFA always makes an effort when appearing before the Standing Committee on Finance to be specific, speak to a limited number of issues, and by outlining proposals that align with broader government priorities, it is possible for farmers and the government to achieve success. This year, the OFA is focusing on four key issues in our discussions with government, and our discussions during the budgetary consultations will be consistent with that. First, OFA stresses the importance of investments in rural infrastructure. Properly maintain roads, bridges, and culverts, allow farmers to bring their inputs in and get their products out from their farm businesses. Access to health care, schools, and other services that our counterparts in urban centers have access to are also key to keeping rural communities thriving. We will also speak to the importance of affordable and reliable energy. The OFA recently conducted a survey of rural Ontario residents to help identify barriers to using natural gas. The results from this survey support the case for expansion of natural gas lines and cost-effective access for rural residents. OFA also continues to lobby for provincial regulatory reform. While changes to the regulatory environment are often a low-cost or no-cost solution for the Ontario government, cutting red tape and duplicating regulation save Ontario farmers time and money, allowing farmers to focus on what they do best, grow food. Finally, OFA will speak to the need for a provincial agriculture and food strategy. Such a strategy must be carefully thought out, and make considerations for food access, food knowledge, and maintain funding for important safety net programs such as the risk management program that provide much-needed stability to keep farmers farming. OFA has enjoyed a positive working relationship with Premier Wynne to date. The 2013 budget is the perfect opportunity for her to deliver on her promises and put some meaningful investment into Ontario's largest sector. I'm Mark Wales, President of the Ontario Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, well, there's a bunch of good stuff in there. I always like it when these commentaries have it listed, like point by point.
Yeah.
Write them down as fast as you say them, too. It's good for us two guys.
Yeah.
So what did you hear there, Scott?
Well, there's just a whole bunch to deal with there, like the infrastructure, the updating of roads and transportation. We know we're a little behind on that. The government is could do a whole lot there for the transportation. It really, whether it's the inputs in or the crops out, the regulatory thing, that wouldn't matter really what industry you talked to about that. Some of the idea is always to maybe get the government out of the way and let us do our job. That always seems to come up. The strategy for the future.
That's a bit tougher. I guess you gotta start talking somewhere.
The strategy for the future, well, that everybody would have a different outlook on that. It would depend on what you were producing, and it really wouldn't. The outlook for what people would need and want. I think we're having some technical issues here.
Is it clicking away on you?
Yeah.
Sounds okay. I think
we already covered the natural gas. Not sure how much public money should be spent on that. The local natural gas suppliers will tend to look after themselves on that.
Yeah, they're talking about he just sort of put under the affordable and reliable energy. So you're right. Gas is just extra.
Yeah, the natural gas is more of a private enterprise as opposed to government supplied.
Mm-hmm.
The electrical energy, the government stepped up to the plate many years ago and set up the electrical grid. So they're kind of in charge of that one, and that. That has really become a kind of a sore spot for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't matter whether it's the public or business. People are now looking at their hydro bills and questioning where the money's going and how it was previously spent and will be spent in the future.
Now, I saw he listed some numbers at the beginning of this editorial, and I think it's worthwhile just kind of going over them and I can see something right off the bat that's people should know about it. It's a $33 billion business, agri-food sector. Now, here's the key, though. The agri-food sector, that includes not just the farmer, primary producer, but processors and retailers and that. So although it's $33 billion, the actual farm part of that is probably 10% maybe, or 15, because the money is actually in the processing. That's where but that's why a box of cornflakes has 25 cents worth of corn, and it costs $3 on the shelf.
Yeah, it's the processor and the retail.
Yeah, so that's where this big number comes from. It includes all that stuff. So the farm section of this is not that much. Now, when they say 10% of the workforce at 700,000 jobs, it's the same factor. There's only I think in Ontario, 1% of the population is involved in primary agriculture, the farmers.
When you say primary, you mean on the farm?
Yep.
As opposed to the related businesses.
Yeah, and the figure quoted by Mark Wales was for the whole sector, agri-food sector.
Yeah, they've kind of grouped it all together.
Yeah.
That's basically from food production all the way to the consumer.
Yes. But it's still, you know, as part of that thing, you know, that's why the Federation jumped up to speak to it, that as the government tries to make the whole sector work, they want to make sure that it doesn't, you know, that the farmers are still part of it. So, you know, whatever that, now we had to discuss about the Local Food Act, and that's sort of the same thing. Presumably the Local Food Act will be, you know, the farmers are involved in that too, because clearly it, because it's more identifiable with the farm guys like that. So, so it's a good, I thought it was pretty good, you know, this is what you give the government before the budget comes out, and you hope some of it sticks. President Wales correctly points out that they want to keep their wish list short so that people will hear it. If you went to those budget meetings and listed everything on your mind, you get lost. You got to pick the 3 or 4 points.
Kind of pick the hills you want to fight on.
That's right. Yep.
There's in the farm industry, there'd be lots of things on the wish list. Kind of broadly pick the ones that they think they need to address. I guess the strategy would be for a long-term outlook. I guess kind of what direction they want to point in. Is that what you took from that, Jeff?
Yeah, the last point was, we're talking about the last point, right?
The government tabled its first budget on May 2nd.
There we go. That's what I was looking for before. We'll get that going in a second here. That's the trouble, Scott. I didn't mean to disregard what you're saying. I'm just trying to multitask here. I don't do a good job at it. Just to your first question there, there's 4 issues here, and you just brought up again about the food and the food and agriculture strategy.
For the long term.
Yeah, yeah.
They want to know what direction the government's pointing.
Yeah. So, now I don't know what was involved in that. That'd have been kind of fun just to see what exactly they did suggest. Like, I mean, Mark Wells did suggest under affordable and reliable energy, he suggested gas. And on provincial regulatory review, he said he cut red tape, but I don't remember a tagline along with food and agriculture strategy. I wish he would give us a little bit of idea what he was thinking there. That just covers a whole darn playing field there. You know, is that something to do with maybe, I mean, that can include land use planning, that could include...
All kinds of things can come into contact with that.
Yeah. So,
I think he's just looking for the government to give him a broad idea of what they're looking to do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
On how they want to maybe protect farmland, and we're still having technical problems.
Yeah, that's really weird how that flops back and forth from year to year, isn't it? I'm going to have to leave a little message on the FM on the programmer's list and see what's gone wrong in the circuit board here, whether it's got a bug in there somewhere. Anyway, let's I'll play another. We got time for one more thing here, Scott. How are you holding?
Okay.
3:15. Can we do one more and then we'll call it a day? Certainly is, and if it's hard to believe, folks, but it's a lot of work to juggle all this stuff here.
Well, what we'll have to do sometime is just pick one of these and debate it to death.
Well, we certainly can, and you know, that's what I'm glad you came out to the show. You're kind of getting the hang of what we're trying to do and what makes sense, and that's a very good topic. I wouldn't want to try to think too complicated like the bees yet, but there's certainly some topics I think we could find that we could...
Let's work with ones that we can maybe have a clearer answer on.
Yeah, that'd be great. So let's just play another song here, and then we'll be right back with another song or two, one last commentary, and thanks for listening in, and we'll be back in a second.
When you won't, you tell me you do, baby, when you don't. Let me know, honey, how you feel. Tell the truth now, is love real? Oh, honey, don't. Well, honey, don't. Honey, don't. No, honey, don't. Hey, honey, don't. Say you will when you won't. Honey, don't. Baby,
you ought to know. I like the way that you wear your clothes. Everything about you is so doggone sweet. You got that sand all over your feet. So, hey, honey, don't.
Hi, this is John Malloy. I'm the member of Provincial Parliament for Kitchener Centre. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, so we're back. And this is our final segment here today, folks. We're going to listen to one more commentary from the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. And we shall... I just... talking to Scott here, I don't think we did this from 2 weeks ago. I sure hope not. But here it is. It's setting the agenda for Ontario food and farms. We'll be right back.
The Wynne government tables its first budget on May 2nd, and the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, along with many Ontarians, will be looking closely at the details and the impact and opportunities for Ontario agriculture. In the weeks leading up to this budget, the Ontario Federation of Agriculture has met with all three political parties to review and actively promote our agenda for farming and food, including budget priorities. Earlier this week, we wrapped up our political briefings at a breakfast with Premier Wynne at Queen's Park. We set out to be sure the voice of our members and the issues of importance to Ontario farmers are heard in the legislature. While our industry represents a diverse mosaic of enterprises, our message about Ontario agriculture to politicians is straightforward. Ontario's farming and food sector is a dynamic economic engine for the province. Farming continues to be a good investment. We collectively hold tremendous potential for fueling growth and jobs in our province. The OFA agenda for farming and food sets out specifics on how we believe Ontario agriculture will continue its significant contribution to the health and wealth of our provincial economy. The agenda addresses issues we know are hindering our members' ability to operate sustainable and profitable family farm operations. We are deeply interested in the details of the Local Food Act as it impacts our members across the province. The OFA supports Bill 36, but we believe it can have an even broader scope to include food literacy programming, address improvements in food access processes, and provide support for local food systems. We know animal welfare is important to our members, and that's why we are working to have changes made to the legislature governing the OSPCA. Ontario agriculture needs a new model for animal welfare developed by farm organizations. That new model must include a proactive campaign on codes of practice, allow for peer visits by trained farmers or Farm and Food Care Ontario staff, include farmer representation on the Animal Care Review Board, and employ trained Ontario Ministry of Agriculture and Food staff for any required enforcement. Many of the issues and the opportunities we are focusing on with politicians depend on a fundamental shift in the regulatory process. Farming and food operations are governed by multiple government ministries, and the OFA is encouraging much greater cross-ministerial collaboration to be able to make headway on issues including combined heat and power, the Local Food Act, and the OSPCA. Like many Ontarians, the OFA will be watching next week's budget. We'll be particularly interested in the details on issues we've been emphasizing with government and policymakers, from an emphasis on rural infrastructure requirements that support rural Ontario to ongoing investments in Ontario agriculture that will ensure our industry remains at the forefront of economic contributions. The opportunities for Ontario farming and food sectors have never been greater, as the entire world increases its expectations for safe, nutritious food produced in a sustainable way. Ontario agriculture has a strong voice to champion issues that boost the benefit for all Ontarians. I'm Mark Wales, President of the Ontario Federation of Agriculture.
Alrighty then. Well, that was a new one. I don't think we did that one before.
Nope.
Thank goodness. It'd be just funny how it goes. I'd pick one that we did before. Just trying something new this week, folks. I normally would have these on and up my laptop, but do the magic of internet. I can download them right off the web and play them right from the Federation's website, so very much handy. So this one was issues for the budget coming up, and this went to, this one was this commentary was recorded on April 26th of this year. I wrote down four things that I think I heard there, Scott. How many did you get?
Well, there was quite a few things that came up there. Talking about sustainable farming, the profitability. If it isn't profitable, it isn't going to be sustained. People aren't going to continuously lose money. Banks take a very dim view of that. So making sure it's profitable is the main concern of every businessman. The infrastructure. Most of the population in Ontario is suffering from almost gridlock for the infrastructure. So it's part and parcel with shipping your foods to the city, your products to the city, that it has to be able to get there. And the more efficiently it gets there, the cheaper it gets there. That leads to the profitability. Same with the inputs. You have to be able to get the fertilizer and everything out to the farmer. So we need the infrastructure to be able to move everything around, same as most other industries. If the farmer can't move it, he's back to that profitability thing.
Mm-hmm. And if you can't get supplies in, and seed, corn, whatever else, too, you can't go very far, fertilizers.
And it has to be done in a timely fashion.
Yeah, and good roads and good bridges make that happen.
Yeah, and that...
There's some other things I saw. There was the first thing led off with was that the Local Food Act, which is Bill number 36, is obviously going to be really have a lot to do with farmers, and so they want to keep their irons hot for that discussion.
The Local Food Act, that was the one concerned with what was being labeled on the products as local.
No.
Is that where you were going with that, Jeff?
No.
Is that how you understood?
The labeling, I mean, the Ontario guys would be somewhat worried about that, but that's mostly a federal issue about where it comes from.
Okay.
The actual physical labeling. This has to do with things like, you know, should the universities or the school boards have to buy 25% of their budget from local food?
Oh, okay.
And you know, the whole thing, how do you make local food work? It's not... Yes, it's labeling, to answer your question, but all the other stuff...
Labeling where it came from.
Yeah.
So it can be called local. And what is their definition in Bill 36 of local?
Yeah, so those are all being worked on. The actual bill, which we could almost do a show on, I had the draft one, like the very first version of it from years ago, but it has, definition of local and... targets and how many years that this percentage of the growth will be, also how to get local food has that part of it. It has a dietary part too, where they if there's not good healthy food around, then people eat junk food and they go to the hospital more often. You know,
okay,
right? You took Canada's food guide.
Okay, all right.
And you said, you know, how many people could not get this diet? And then the Local Food Act would try to address that to make sure that the local food was part of the food guide, for instance. You know, so fruits and
that would seem like quite a regulatory challenge.
Yeah. but I, you know, I'm just speaking off the top of my head, and I wish I had it in front of me. But the Local Food Act is here now. They've been talked about for years, and it's in committee, and it will be voted on presumably this fall or next year. And it was originally proposed by Angela Horvath, the NDP, like 4 years ago, and then it kept getting beat up. Like when, for instance, when Liberals prorogued Parliament.
It got hung up in
hung up again. It got brought back just before the latest summer recess. So none of the parties wants to see it disappear. They want this. There's unanimity amongst all the parties that the Food Act's a good thing. So they keep bringing it back. It's just a matter of getting it done. And it's just really now how much you're going to cover under it. So the Local Food Act was one thing they were talking about. And animal welfare was another one that Mark Wales mentioned there. So interesting case there, and I kind of get this. So right now, animal welfare is really the responsibility in general across the province for the Society for the Provincial Cruelty to Animals. Now, the rub there has been that to some of those inspectors, normal farm practices are coming to their question because they're not agriculturally related.
Okay,
they don't. So that's where it comes into that. If we're going to have animal welfare acts, then let's have a peer group, which is a committee of your equals. Like, you know, you drive a truck. Well, the person should be qualified to come in and you're driving is other truck drivers, right? Because they know what you're up against.
So unfortunately, that's not the way the government tends to organize things.
That's right.
As a regulatory body, yeah.
So that's why in this case, the Federation is saying specifically, if you're going to do this, make sure it's your peer group that's looking over how you run your farm, not somebody who's got no experience in agriculture.
So they want more defined criteria to be judged by then.
They just want someone who knows your business to interpret the rules.
Yeah.
They don't want someone who just reads the rules and they don't know what the rules mean, but there's some judgment involved.
Yeah, as how subjective it is.
Yes. With subjective and objectivity,
anybody
can administer objective rules because it just says 30 miles per hour or 40 miles per hour, but subjectively it depends on the circumstances.
Yes,
and that's the kind of peer review they're looking for when it comes to animal welfare. And just to toot a little bit here about animal welfare, and I'm going to get him back on here again. This is Curtis Littlejohn, a farmer in our area, to the south of us in Brant County, and he was on the show previously talking about the new proposed code of practice for pigs. And this is the latest and greatest, where the industry sits down with all the stakeholders and says, how do you want us to raise pigs from here on in? And they've done this for all the animal classes. So that's the kind of the animal welfare, we're saying, let's get the industry to do that stuff rather than trying to get someone from downtown Toronto to do it. That's just going to, you know, who knows where they're coming from with that. So, and the only thing I wrote down here, you talked about rural infrastructure, but it was combined food and power. So we had a discussion about that in our segment, two segments ago about cogeneration. So I guess that about covers everything on that one.
Well, he was talking also about the multi-level of government for dealing with the various regulatory bodies, how there's so many different levels of government regulations to pass through for everything that people would like to do and need to do, and how approvals can take a long time to get.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to make changes and do different things.
Yeah, the red tape is a real pain.
Yeah, let's just cover it with red tape. Some of that needs to be streamlined.
What, funny you mention that, but one of the ideas was, and maybe it worked for everybody, but so basically, you know, agriculture is like any other industry that health and safety and workman's compensation and environment this, and everybody's got a little input. But they should have just a one-stop shop for all the regulations when it comes to agriculture. It's too much to ask.
Some simplification.
Yeah, like, you know, if you want to do something on your farm, you should have to phone up six different people. If you could phone up one agency, and they would say, we'll check into this, this, and this, and this for you. That's thought to be a good deal. Now, who wouldn't want that, right? Any firefighting group to phone up and say, what are all my obligations as a firefighter, and have one agency do it. But it's I can get that for the farm stuff, because typically farms are smaller family run organizations, and you just don't have the staff around to chase down all these different governance.
Yeah, and it's all the different levels of government and associated regulatory bodies that they have to deal with.
Yes.
That the red tape can seem to go on forever, and making a timely decision seems to take a lot longer than necessary.
That's right. So that was one idea from way back. Was now some people would just say throw out the red tape or throw out the rules, but that's not going to work either, because, you know, society wants these certain things to be that way. But it's just how to make it work better.
How to make it work better,
more
because some regulation is needed, and how to make it more streamlined and efficient. I'm sure the government, being a regulatory body, and that they seem to always be making new rules.
So I think that's the gist of what Mark Wales is saying in that one. That was made available to the press on April 26th, and it's about the provincial budget and what has to do with agriculture. It's in this commentary from the Ontario Federation. So,
yeah, and the farm related, as he had said before, was 10% of the workforce and employs about 700,000 people. Mm-hmm. It's quite significant. And
how are you feeling there? Do you want to do a little bit of wrap-up afterwards, or do you want to just wrap up here about now? We could just maybe do a play a song and just kind of wrap up some of these things.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, let's do that. All right. We'll be back in a moment. So, folks, we'll play a song and an ad, or a song and a story, and we'll be right back. Thanks for listening in.
I nearly lost my voice when I asked you to dance.
This is, or I am, John Tutt from the Princess Cinemas in Uptown Waterloo, and you are listening to the Agricultural Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
I'm Mark Schwerer from Region Waterloo Public Health, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Region Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, so My gosh, it's kind of flown by pretty quick. Hey, Scott, it's almost an hour now, an hour and a bit, so we'll wrap up our show today, and thanks again for coming out. But so, just quickly, I think we, if I'm not mistaken, we listened to five episodes here. We first of all, we talked about bee colony disorder. You remember anything comes to mind when you talk about that?
The neonics?
Neonics.
Next, there we go.
Yeah, so the bees are dying, and they think it's seed treatment from corn and bean seeds.
And they're still looking into it and haven't found a cause they can nail down yet.
Yeah, because even when they do know it's toxic, but not in out west, apparently they don't have half the trouble with that, and they have neonics out there too, but those bees are maybe not healthy, but they're better off than the ones in Ontario.
It is definitely a serious concern.
Yes, for sure. And then we talked a little bit about natural gas and whether rural Ontario has access to natural gas, and only 20% of rural properties have access to even natural gas, and the Federation looking for infrastructure money to get that built. But as you pointed out, it's a private enterprise, and let that be where it is. The people choose to live out in the countryside, and they're not... I mean, if it's
it will grow out to them at some point.
Yeah, if it gets big enough. I don't know. You know, I don't know what the minimum size is for a serviced area anymore, but I'm sure. I don't know. I mean, they guess be pretty big. Like, I don't think, like, Roseville didn't get theirs till, well, they put that compressor station in before they were ever going to get nothing. And that was only a mile away. And it also serviced 4197 area, so how big of an area is that? I don't know.
As the demand grows, then it will.
Yeah.
The companies will stretch the pipe.
Mind you, there's not many. The small towns in Ontario are not going to have, you know, they don't have the 401 and the big city beside them, so.
Yeah, and the companies are going to service the greatest demand first.
That's right. And number three we talked about was cogeneration.
Biomass.
Now, for agriculture, cogeneration covers a pile. I mean, even the automakers were talking about, you know, if I got a factory in Detroit or Windsor or Aylmer or something, and I'm making car parts, why can't I make my own electricity? Because I have enough volume and sell electricity and use the heat or something. So cogeneration is not just an agriculture one, but it's just a popular, interesting concept.
Yes.
Like, as you pointed out, landfills do it now.
Yeah.
Region Waterloo one does it now. And so for agriculture, the issues there were, for guys who have greenhouses or who are trying to produce biomass or process biomass, and anybody who's food processing.
Make it economically viable for the farmer to produce some of his own electricity.
Yeah, through the manure, biomass and gas, and whether you're just burning fuel to make heat for a greenhouse. Then we talked about the March 8th budget, and the speaker on the commentaries pointed out that the agribusiness, of which agriculture primary producers are a part of, the agribusiness is $33 billion in Ontario, 10% of the workforce at 700,000 jobs, and the agriculture farmers are maybe, you know, 10% of that sort of thing. So it's but clearly what is good for agribusiness is probably good for farmers, more or less.
People have to eat.
Yeah.
And production of food is a concern, and
that's true. And so there's some specific issues in that heading was rural infrastructure, affordable, reliable energy, cutting red tape, and food and growth strategy, one of those really big things.
Broad.
That's for sure. And our last topic was the budget for growing and food, which is an editorial put out on April 26th, almost month and a half after the previous one, and this was also about the budget. And so this guy talked about local food, animal welfare,
regulatory, and the strategy again,
rural infrastructure and combined food and power. Yeah, so that was our show. I guess I did a lot of yakking there. Anything else you want to add to all that stuff there?
No, I think you covered the finer points there.
Okay.
That's I'm not sure if we're clear to find anything for anybody or just made it worse.
Well, we hope you, our faithful listeners, enjoyed our show today. We played a few songs that was from a previous guest last year, but his name was Andrew Hunt, and he spoke on behalf of animal rights. I'd like to see him again sometime. So without much further ado, I guess we'll call this the day a wrap. And it's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS 1.3 Sound FM. It's your host, Jeff Steger. With me is my co-host, Scott Lissel, which I'd like to thank very much for coming out. And listen in next week. Next week, our guests, I think, are going to be either... Should be. Well, I'm not too sure who's going to show up. There's Curtis going to come out. A bunch of junior farmers from New Zealand and Europe, and also a guy from BASF Canada. So stay tuned, folks. We'll see you next week, and have a safe week. We'll see you later.